Hello, you're watching a very special episode of Agenda Awani with me, Lukman Haris. Now, artificial intelligence or AI has by now become an inescapable fact of life. We are looking to apply AI to every aspect of our life. And the latest by the government is that the government is forging ahead with the National Digital ID in 2023, where it plans to fast-track the implementation of a National Digital Identity Development Project, or IDN, which has been in the works since 2021. Now, what can we expect in terms of the challenges, but also the benefits? Now, joining me remotely is Professor Marco Gerke. He's the director of the Cybercrime Research Institute. Professor Gerke, thank you so much for joining us. Good morning, afternoon, night, wherever you are. Thanks.
Thank you very much for having me.
Right. First, Professor, how can generative AI derail the implementation of a national digital ID backed by the government?
Well, I think we need to separate those two topics. So in general, there is great progress made with regard to artificial intelligence. At the moment, you sometimes can have the impression that this is helping us to save the world. I'm not quite sure if we're there yet. It's definitely a very interesting technology, and we have to follow what is going to come ahead. The second part is the national ID. I have to admit, despite the fact that I've visited your country several times and have spoken at events there related to national security and cybersecurity, I did not follow in detail the current plans of the government. What I can say is that a national ID and a digital ID are key components of an e-government nation, and therefore there are advantages to it, there are challenges. So the advantages would definitely be a broader participation in e-life, so in electronic services. The disadvantages can be cyber attacks. And therefore, when you're looking globally, countries that are implementing such technology are keeping an eye on those security aspects to make sure that they're having a sound system in place that the citizens can trust.
Right. One thing for sure is that big scale changes will probably have to be made. Now, given Malaysia's fast track transition into services enabled and verified by digital IDs, how should the general public, businesses and also the government be prepared for this monumental change?
I think this is a really crucial point. You have to bring everybody, all the stakeholders on board. So it's the one thing to have to ensure that the government and government institutions are ready for this transition. It's another thing that you have to ensure that citizens and businesses are coming with you on this process. So the regular process that I see in different countries around the world that I'm advising on those digitalization aspects is that we are trying to identify where different businesses and citizens can benefit from this kind of technology and putting this up front. So to show them the showcases here, this is where you're benefiting from this in the future. It can be applying for a driver's license, or it can be for businesses doing transactions and services. So therefore, my suggestion would be, as a general suggestion from an outsider who is not based in your country, would be to follow these overall processes that we're seeing as positive around the world.
All right. And coming back to what you said about cybersecurity, there are big potential big risks there. Now, having assisted several countries in drafting cybercrime legislation, how should lawmakers here in Malaysia prepare to safeguard the public from sophisticated, ever-evolving criminals and also tools now potentially powered and boosted by generative AI?
So what I can say is that while I was visiting your country in the past and have participated in conferences related to this topic, is that the government is very well aware. There are basically two things that are necessary from my point of view. The one thing is to follow the international discussion, international developments in this regard, as you can learn from this. We do not need to reinvent the wheel. On the other hand side, we have to be very mindful about the culture, the history, and the legal landscape in your country. So any measure that is taken needs to be adjusted to your national demands and to your culture. When it comes to generative AI, I think it is very early at this stage. We're going to see what kind of technology, what kind of services are going to be implemented. We're currently seeing the first one popping up. We have to make sure that we follow this. I don't think it is necessary that the legal framework is first, but it is one essential component. And I suggest to have a look at other examples. The Biden White House just passed an executive order in this regard. The European Union is working on an AI Act. Have a look at what others are doing, see what fits for you and implement it.
Right. So besides those countries, what are the countries? I mean, we're looking at best market practices, right? So what are countries that have successfully implemented national digital IDs with strong safeguards against cyber attacks?
This is, again, very difficult for me to comment on because I'm not aware about the specifics of the plan that you're implementing. So it's sometimes difficult to compare. But we had the former president of Estonia here, one of the countries, definitely a smaller nation compared to your country, but a country that very successfully implemented e-government services and national IDs. And therefore, I think this would be a typical example to look to.
Right. How can we use AI to further protections for our national digital ID databases. I think we talk about AI actually potentially boosting security risks, but how do we flip that coin and use AI to our advantage in terms of boosting security?
Well, artificial intelligence has obviously been utilized by criminals already. They can enhance their attacks. However, at the same time, it is used to protect computer systems. It is used for cybersecurity purposes. So we can use it in our defense strategies as well. I think I would not put too much focus currently on seeing AI as a key component in protecting a national identity, a digital identity, because it is at a very early stage. However, it can be one component of a cybersecurity strategy.
Right. How about adoption and awareness? Because here in this country, there are pockets of society who are still not very much technologically savvy. So how do you see the challenges present itself in terms of getting everyone on board with using national digital IDs?
Well, that's a key issue, absolutely. So awareness raising is a fundamental component. This is what I meant when I, in the beginning, mentioned that you should try to get all the stakeholders on board. I believe this needs to be done on a community level. That means definitely in your capital, I had the impression that a lot of people are using information communication technology. While it might be in rural areas, might be different, it is very important to speak with the local stakeholders there to transport the messages and showcase how people can benefit from the technology.
What's your take on the age-old argument that if we digitalize everything, here in this country, we've already digitalized our road tax for cars, we've already digitalized our driving licenses, and it seems that the national digital ID is the last step. I always joke with friends that I dream of a day where I go out without having to bring my wallet, and my national ID is the last remaining obstacle to that. But detractors would say that's akin to putting all your eggs in one basket. If something happens to your device, if you lose it, if it's breached or something of that nature, then everything will be compromised. So what's your take on this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is definitely a threat. However, if you have one physical ID and your wallet is stolen, you have the same issue. There is a chance with regard to a digital device that you could be able to gain access to this document again if you're losing your phone. You can buy a new phone and immediately get access to your ID again and to your driver's license. So in general, I see there are advantages to digital technologies. I don't want to give you the impression that I'm not aware that there are risks associated to it. However, if I'm looking at the overall framework and I'm seeing if we mitigate the risk or trying to mitigate the risk, we can build a technology that is stronger than the traditional technology.
Right. Can you just give me probably a few best practices to prevent AI? I want to go back to AI just a bit because I do think it's. I know you mentioned that it's probably too early to talk about AI, but I think it is a key component. So can you probably list down some best practices to prevent AI from derailing the best laid plans for a digital-based economy as a whole?
Absolutely. So I think it is very important to better understand the artificial intelligence, the system that the people are designing. So we need to have a certain degree of transparency with regard to what are they designing, what are the test results. We have to ensure that there is no bias. We need some kind of accountability. In the EU, there are different approaches to develop frameworks. There are recommendations from a high-level expert group regarding to ethical aspects of using AI. There are specific guidelines which are developed, AP4AI, which are developed for law enforcement agencies using AI, which is a crucial issue. I mean, people would probably feel threatened if artificial intelligence is used in criminal investigations. Nevertheless, if you're respecting certain principles, I believe AP4AI is based on 12 different principles. If you're respecting those principles, I see a great advantage to using this kind of technology. I would be open and optimistic, but nevertheless, keep an eye on the fact that we need to operate it in a legal and ethical way.
Right. I want to finish with a very simple question, Professor. It seems that everything is moving to the digital realm, as many think it should. 10, 15 years from now, maybe 20 years from now, what is left for the physical domain? Should we still keep things physically? And if yes, what? Or is it just 100% towards the digital realm?
No, I would not advocate for moving completely in the digital room. I think there are aspects that you cannot substitute with digital. I'm here at a conference where people are meeting, hundreds of people are meeting, because this physical contact is important. You need to see your counterpart. There are a couple of things which are lost in video conferences. Therefore, I think we will be able to make more space for these physical experiences if we are moving some of the services that are distracting us from this into the digital world. If AI can take over some of the workflows, can support you in certain areas and ensure that you can enjoy a beautiful beach, a walk with your wife, on the beach or playing with your kids, I think that is something we should aim for. and not necessarily substituting everything with digital services and meeting your family online.
Yeah, I completely agree, and us doing this via video conferencing does feel that something is kind of lost in between. So I do wish that you'll drop by our studio one of these days. But thank you so much, Professor Marco Gerke, Director of Cybercrime Research Institute, and Agenda Awani. We'll be right back. You're back with Agenda Awani with me, Lokman Haris. We are continuing our special series of interviews from the sidelines of the Global Cybersecurity Forum in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Now, for this second segment, I'd like to focus on this piece of news announced just recently by the government, which is the sole operator of Malaysia's transmission grid, TNB, or Tenaga Nasional Berhad, has pledged to invest 90 billion ringgit for the grid infrastructure in the next 6 years under the NETR, or the National Energy Transition Roadmap 2050. So the grid investments estimate would include costs to fund future infrastructure such as battery storage. Aside from grid infrastructure, the NETR also highlighted a slew of flagship catalyst projects, which includes a large-scale integrated renewable energy zone led by Khazanah Nasional Berhad. Now, these multi-billion ringgit infrastructure and investments will aim to power homes, factories using IoT or Internet of Things, and also critical infrastructure such as data centers, hospitals and transportation, all part of Malaysia's attempted transition to the digital economy. Now, joining me today from Riyadh is Mr. Kenneth Pentimonti. He is the principal and European engineer for Paladin Capital Group. Mr. Pentimonti, very nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure. So, following all these announcements, how can Malaysia secure these critical infrastructures against cyber threats?
Yeah, there are a number of ways that that Malaysia can work to secure its infrastructure. I think first of which being that Malaysia should look to identify and bring on experts that can do a whole assessment of the digital infrastructure. I think to start is assessment and mitigation of risk. I think it's very easy to discuss kind of specific solutions. Cybersecurity is very broad and very vast as well. The different risk exposures, the different attack vectors are also very broad. And so I think to get a broad sense with experts that can come in, look at the whole infrastructure, and identify the key points of weakness is a very, very good first step.
All right,
please go ahead.
But speaking of which, what are the key measures in cybersecurity that grid operators must deploy alongside these investments into the energy infrastructure?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, first to invest in technologies that secure the networks that those grids, those infrastructures are on, I think is critical to identify, to both protect and then identify potential attacks on those networks, I think is a critical first step. As well, making sure that technologies are in place to protect the communications and the information and data going in and out of those networks. That's critical, making sure the critical data is encrypted. Those are a couple of critical initial steps. I would say people are also a huge part of the equation as well, making sure that the people, the employees and other professionals that are within and operating those networks and operating that infrastructure are trained and knowledgeable about cybersecurity, I think is a huge piece to the equation as well.
Yeah, you've kind of led into my next question, because the strongest chain is only as strong as its weakest link. So flipping over to the consumption side, to the consumer side, what about the data centers, the transportation service providers, the manufacturers, the remote workers? What can they do to protect against power outages resulting from a cyber attack?
Yeah, well, they can make sure that they are secure and safe themselves. You know, that they are following basic cybersecurity protocols. That they have good password controls in place. That they are you know, that they are, you know, have emails and other communications, that they are, you know, those are as secure as can be. And, you know, I would say as well, they should make sure that to take on themselves that they are knowledgeable of kind of the key threats. Email and some of the, you know, the basic, you know, communication protocols are still the biggest attack vectors today in cybersecurity. And so a lot of kind of just basic blocking and tackling around passwords and email can go a long way in making sure that, you know, that those consumers, the, you know, the supply chains around that infrastructure are safe.
Right, don't skip the basics. But we can also, and we must use emerging more advanced technologies to our advantage. Technologies such as AI, absolutely, for example. Do you see AI playing a protective role in safeguarding such critical infrastructures? Or is AI more likely to be used by criminals or bad actors seeking to attack critical infrastructure of a country?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the short answer is both. I think it's I think AI is going to play a critical role in allowing cybersecurity companies and next generation innovative technologies to be better at protecting critical digital infrastructure. It has huge potential. I think we're just at the tip of the iceberg. The flip side, just as you point out, is that cyber criminals and bad actors are going to also leverage AI, and it's going to create new attack vectors, and it's going to create issues that then, you know, critical infrastructure players, just folks in general that are, you know, are operating and trying to protect critical digital infrastructure are going to need to deal with. So it's going to go both ways. I think it's a really exciting opportunity, but it's also one that we've got to stay on top of. There's some really interesting policies and government regulations that are coming out in Europe, in the US, to help control and put safeguards around AI. But there'll need to be some really, so as you mentioned, there'll need to be innovation that helps deal with AI as well.
Yep. I'm not sure how much you can comment on Malaysia or the Asia Pacific region or Southeast Asia in that case, but do you see Southeast Asian countries, their systems, being able to withstand or safeguard against cyber attacks from very experienced professionals, if you can call them that?
Yeah. Well, I'm not an expert on the Malaysian critical infrastructure, so I can't comment specifically on you know, the setup and weaknesses or vulnerabilities or lack thereof. But yeah, what I can say is that, you know, if a lot of the basic cybersecurity policies, procedures, technologies are put in place there, that can go a long way. You never have an infrastructure, a system that is 100% safe. That's never going to happen. But you can reduce risk dramatically by, as I said before, just doing a lot of the basics, just making sure that the basic policies, procedures, technologies are in place, and the people are trained in an adequate way. But you know, it's a dynamic space. The threats are continually changing, and so it'll continue to mean putting resources and efforts against making sure that you know, the next generation of technologies are put in place to continue to protect that infrastructure.
Now, as with many things, this shift, this migration, would presumably require tremendous amounts of investments. Now, at a time where a lot of governments, the Malaysian government included, choose to spend their limited funds on more pressing, maybe even populist issues such as controlling inflation and things like that, what do you say to governments who are saying that we don't just simply don't have the financial capacity to execute this? Maybe we put this on the back burner, we think about it again in the next term and things like that. So what do you say to them?
Yeah, what I would say, you know, look, it's always a challenge to decide how to allocate capital, and there are lots of competing pressures. What I would say, though, is cybersecurity is critical, and I think it is short-sighted if you do not invest, because I think, you know, everything today, we're talking critical infrastructure here, but, you know, businesses, you know, I would say everything is very dependent on digital commerce, on digital infrastructure. And if that goes down, if that's breached, the implications are really dramatic. And, you know, I think to not invest and properly be ahead of that curve is very dangerous. And I think, you know, as I say, it's something that is very risky if proper investment's not made.
In terms of saving the environment, going green, or in Malaysia's case, having the target of going net zero by the year 2050, what can we expect this shift to bring in terms of the impact on that particular goal?
Yeah, well, I think obviously it's exciting, and I think there's a huge benefit to going green and to adopting next generation renewable technologies and energy technologies. Those typically are, I would say, more dependent on digital infrastructure than kind of old world technologies. And so I think that does open up additional attack vectors and additional opportunity for bad actors to penetrate those and to, you know, to cause havoc. But I think many of those technologies are now being designed with security in mind. And I think that's, I think the winners in and around that wave of development are going to be the ones that have taken into account cybersecurity and make sure that the people using that infrastructure can trust it, and that the downtime and issues around that infrastructure are limited.
Right. Lastly, Mr. Pantimonti, what can you share with us in terms of what to expect from the Global Cybersecurity Forum in Riyadh? What do you hope to achieve? Because, you know, the criticisms of these forums, you know, things like Davos and international forums, is that it's just dialogue, but very few meaningful actions. So how do you respond to that?
Well, look, I think all actions start with some good dialogue and planning and interaction. And I think this is an amazing event to get global leaders across the world together to discuss cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is a global issue. It's one where everybody should be working together much more than they have in the past. And this is a fantastic platform to do that. And I think that it will lead to lots and lots of good action going forward. We certainly plan as Paladin Capital, to continue to invest aggressively globally, including here in the region, hopefully in Asia as well. We see, as they say, global is a cyber issue, and that technologies and innovation are going to be happening globally, and then the users of those technologies need to adopt those technologies globally. So I think this is a fantastic place. We're just getting going here with the Global Cybersecurity Forum, and I'm excited to participate and come away with a lot of good action.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kenneth Pantimonti, Principal and European Manager for Paladin Capital Group. Thank you so much for joining Agenda Awani and tuning in. I'll see you in the next episode. Have a good day.
Thank you very much.